think in France somewhere, enjoying the wonderful countryside. So in her absence, I'm going to call the meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Lynn?
Here.
Hodson?
Here.
Palinkas?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Banks? Coert?
Present.
Emmanuel?
Okay. I think everybody has in front of them a copy of the agenda. I think there haven't been any revisions to it. I'm open to a motion regarding the agenda.
I move for approval.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the agenda is approved. Next item, by the way, there is circulating an envelope with the minutes of the closed session. We're going to move to approval of the minutes of the open session for September 14th, 2015. Those minutes are in the packet in front of most people.
I'm
going to
approve the minutes.
All in favor?
Aye.
I didn't hear any. All in favor? I'm sorry.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Okay. There being none. Then we're going to go to the minutes of the closed session for September 14, 2015, which are circulating. I see them over on that side of the table.
I would move for approval.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? There being none, minutes are approved. This is the next item, which is public participation. We have a large crowd today. Yes, if you could try to let us know what your name is and then go ahead.
Yeah.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, see. And I'm Roy Carter Jr., elected official. Number 11 district in Champaign County. Okay?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. And I'm going to go on the public participation to keep down some, you know, because I don't see you ever stay somewhere for elected officials or either the county board member. So I'm going to do mine on the public participation. Now, saying that, I'm very unhappy. First of all, I was shocked when I found out that the state was in here today. And I'm asking, I want to ask my chair, this is the first time I've been able, did you know that?
Yeah, I knew they were in here.
No, I'm talking about her. That is my fault right now.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes, I knew that. They're here for their annual visit.
But you haven't had time to let us know.
No, I haven't.
Okay, I accept that. So, extend from that, I'm going to report my bar to her right now. Madam Chair, it's bad. And I can accept no more, you know, coming over there telling us that everything's all right. And this building is, the operation of this building is zero. And it's sad. And I was here before and I tried to have a little input in trying to tell them what I see that, and of course they didn't listen at me at the time. But now, when I came back this time, first thing they told me when they saw me, well, we hate to see you come back in this condition, but we're glad to see you. And I just can't understand. And it's, you don't have to have a rocket. Man, you don't have to be a rocket scientists to figure out the stuff that's going on wrong here. It's just blatant. Martin, we got a report that really hurt me real bad. I didn't say too much about it because I think it was 2 years ago when Mr. came for the board and got almost $1 million, $900,000, wasn't it?
Mr. DeMay?
Yes. Am I correct, sir?
Mr. Carter, public participation is just like at the county board meeting where there isn't a conversation back and forth.
Well, this goes beyond that.
Well, this is your opportunity to speak under public participation.
Huh?
This is your opportunity to speak under public participation. But the board can't respond, just like at a county board meeting.
Well, that's been our problem too long. Well, since I can't get in a response, I'll put it this way. I'm going to ask you, will you consider having a special meeting for this nursing home with the county board?
Yes, one that's scheduled for next February.
Immediately. Okay.
Are there other members of the public that also want to speak up? This is the opportunity.
Is it my turn?
So if you could just say who you are, so that's...
I'm Dave Laker. My wife is a resident here. And I blow hot and cold. Sometimes I'm very happy with the way things are going, and sometimes I'm not. The things that I'm not happy about are the dietary services and the way they're handled, the timeliness of them, and it's seemingly that nobody down there can make up their mind what it is they want to do or when they want to do it. But one of the biggest complaints I have is timeliness in food's cold. It runs from not warm to cold. And, you know, our residents have enough problems while they're not introducing anything that makes them not want to eat. They need to eat. They need to keep up their strength and their weight. A couple other things I've got. The acoustics in this room are particularly bad. We, in the audience, can't, for the most part, hear what's being discussed. And lots of times, it's because it's discussed towards that end of the room, which is a natural thing. We have a facility in Brookings that has the audio facilities that would allow, A, you guys to be better understood, and for us to be better understood, and also, it would allow greater audience participation. And I think one of the things this nursing home needs is audience participation, because we need all the help, all the goodwill we can find out there to make this thing go, to refinance it, to keep it going. Other things that I'd like to talk about. I missed a meeting, apparently an important meeting, in August or September, and I didn't want to deprive you of hearing what I had to say. So I wrote out some comments that will be handed out later on, and I think that they bear reading, and I'm serious about them. There's something just food for thought, but some of the things that I want to talk about in that are things that we need to address some way. I'm not claiming to be an all-knowing person or right about everything that I am proposing, but I know that some of these things, I worked with an old boy one time. He said, you got a couple of opinions. He said, but generally the answer is somewhere in between them. And I'm sure that there's enough intelligent people in this institution and on this board and any employee group to put this thing together and make it work better than it is and to manage the finances better. One of the things that we do very well is we do metrics very well. But metrics aren't what the nursing home population and employees want to hear about. Metrics are for something, they're important. They're very important. And Scott and the group do a good job with them. But I think my feeling, metrics and the things that go with them belong in a different kind of a meeting. Now, that's just my feeling on that. I also think that in listening to people in this facility, we've got a lot of people in here that really, really care, and they make it go. They don't understand what goes on in the management group or the board group. They don't understand. They feel that they're not heard and not understood when they're heard. And again, that's my opinion, and I got lots of opinions. But anyway, it's like the expenditures we make on the weekends. We basically employ a different set of people on the weekends. We employ agency people and temporary and overtime people. And I think as near as I can tell with the rough figures, and my figures are rough, but they're not that inaccurate. I think we spend somewhere around $1.4 million or more a year managing weekends and weekend salaries alone. That's a lot of money. If we could find a way to manage that more effectively, we could put that money someplace else where we needed to put it. And we agency, overtime, and weekend staff, I think that Karen and Scott can validate the numbers. I think they have the numbers. We just need to be doing something different. I think the mechanisms are here to do something different. We have to involve everyone, management, the employee representatives, even the family members in this thing, because this facility, although I don't think this is readily understood, is something that the county and the area needs. We need it to be better than it is, as Mr. Carter says, and I think we can do that. We need to change some things, and I think you guys are starting to move that way from what I can see. I've been attending meetings now for 18 or 19 months, and this is a better board than it was. But that don't mean you plateau here. You go on with, we got to manage this thing, and we're not. We haven't been. Some of the problems have been around for a long time. We need to fix them. I'm not trying to be critical of anyone or anything. I just want to make this thing work any way we can. And I know that the people in this room feel the same way that I do. We just lost another staff member that, for a good reason, she went on to further her education, but she was running a family council meeting. And it was starting to produce some good stuff, wasn't it, Karen? And I hope that position is filled with somebody that has the same feelings about doing her job as she did. She did a good job. We need more people like that. And people's what make us go. And how we get along with them and how they view us. And I say us and we a lot because I didn't intend to get involved in a situation like this, but I'm here. And it is us and we. I mean, we got to make this thing go. And that's probably enough said for tonight. Thank you for the podium.
Did you want to hand that to
Huh?
I left the meeting coming.
We've got a handout for you,
if I can, Mr. Chairman.
We can return to an individual. I'm okay with it. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. He's correct, right, but I don't think this board or the employees here understand who owned this property. Now, I'm an elected official that's supposed to take care of the taxpayer money. That's what we're elected for, to take care of the county board's money and its property. And I don't think that's been explained to this board head, the operation, of any of this. And that's a shame. This property belongs to the taxpayers of Champaign County, also elected us to oversee. And then I'm going to tell you that's what I swore to do, and I'm going to do my part. I'm going to do my part to do that. Thank you.
Are there other members of the public that wish to be heard?
Yeah.
Sure, go ahead. Just state your name and go ahead.
I'm Marcia Grothy. My mom's Betty Grothy, and she's been here since February. And I appreciate the relationships that I've built with all the CNAs and the nurses. She's in Unit 2. And but I noticed lately, in the last couple of weeks, that there's been some cutting back of enough aides, CNAs, and that are on that particular unit. And I don't know why, but I have noticed that. And, of course, that always concerns me, not just for my mom, but for the people that are working, because it's too much for them, and then also for the rest of the residents that live here. So that concerns me. And so, I'm not sure why, but I'd like that, because it was going well up to that point a couple weeks ago. And there seemed like there was adequate enough of people and CNAs, and so that's my voice for today, is that concern.
And are there other members of the public that wish to be heard? Yes.
My name is Douglas Goodwine. My mother's been here for 3 years. This place is my school. I've learned a lot here. Not all of it's good, but some of it is. Some things I've learned as my mother became older and more confused after 3 years. It is possible for a resident to sit in the dining room and not be brought a meal. It happened to my mother. It's possible to be left in your room and not be taken to the dining room or be brought a meal. It has happened to my mother. It is possible to be too sick to get out of bed and have a meal put in your room and have no one available to feed you. It's happened to my mother. It is possible to have 45 people in the dining room and only one CNA available to feed the incapacitated. I've seen it happen. Will the nursing home let a person starve to death? I have never seen that. I hope to God it never happens. But I have to take steps to make sure it doesn't happen to my mother. I've done that by hiring companions to be with her for two meals, and I'm on the third shift. I take care of cover the third meal. It costs me an extra $4,000 a month to have companions for my mother on top of the nursing home's charge of $7,000 a month. The companions make sure my mother has the availability of food in order to regain her health and live as long as possible. Every day is a different challenge. That's why I'm here.
And I guess we could ask again, are there other members of the public who wish to be heard? Okay. All right. And I have another question for Deb. Is there any rule about use of the Brookins building? Do you know if that is an option in front of us or an option that we could exercise?
The nursing home bylaws specifically state that the nursing home board meetings will be held at the nursing home for the convenience of residents and family members to be able to attend those meetings. But those bylaws, you can certainly recommend amending them if you think there's more value to holding your meetings at Brookins.
All right. Something to... I think the board can think about and digest as an idea. Okay, we're going to then move on to the item six listed as communications. Any contributions for that item? Okay, there being none, I think we'll move on to item seven, management report.
All right, if you turn to page eight in your packet, we'll first talk about the census. So in August, our census fell to 179.4 for the month on average, and that's down from 190.7 in July. Medicare for the month of August was just under 10, basically no change from August. Our current census, as of today, is 175, and we have 8 Medicare, and we have actually 4, 2 admits that were supposed to be coming in today with 2 more coming in the next few days. 3 of those are Medicare, 1 of those was hospice. So again, what we're seeing again is a countywide slowdown in hospital discharges to nursing homes. Over the last few weeks, we've actually had visits from a couple of our main competitors asking us about how our census is, and they're telling us that they're down significantly, probably more so than we are on a percentage basis because those facilities are smaller than us. So again, this looks like a cyclical trend that hopefully will start moving northbound. But over the last week or so, we've been starting to see more inquiries and more admissions. Unfortunately, over the same short period of time, we've also had roughly about the same amount, a little bit more discharges to home. So hopefully we'll get our discharges down and we'll get our census moving back up.
Have any of your competitors talked about possibly abandoning the marketplace, do you think?
No.
Okay.
I don't know if they would tell us that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hopefully they would if they were interested in orderly sort of exit, but okay.
And again, we haven't heard any rumors
okay.
to that effect. On page 9, you can see that what is missing is the chart. I've added the average daily census by payer without the Medicaid conversion days, and so I have handed out the missing page. And so again, if you compare that to what I have typically provided to you on a monthly basis, is what's on page 8, and that includes the conversion of private pay to Medicaid as these Medicaid applications have been approved. And again, I think on a year-to-date basis, we've probably had well over 5,000 days that have been moved from private pay to Medicaid as these applications have been approved. So excuse the data because we convert the dollars and the census in the month that that conversion takes place, meaning when that application was approved. So what you see on page, or what you should have seen on page 9 and what's in this handout is the census without the Medicaid conversion date. So what this basically tells you is who was in the building by payer mix in those months. So it gives you a clearer picture of the residents that are actually in the building. So again, what you see here is, again, 105.8 in August with Medicaid, 60.9 private pay, 10.3 Medicare, et cetera, et cetera. But again, the key numbers are the Medicaid and the private pay, and that should give you a better idea of the residents by payer that are actually in the building. And I think what I'll do in future months is I will no longer include census without the conversion days, unless you tell me otherwise. And I'll keep the new chart in there. Any questions on that? Page 10, admission and discharges. You can see we, in the month of August, we had 16 admits, but we had 24 separations. September, we had 10 admits, but our discharges and separations were 11. So, and again, over the last few days, as I just said, we've had an increase in admissions and inquiries, but again, the discharges have been about the same amount. On page 12, to coincide with the resident days without Medicaid conversion days. I have also included the payer mix without the Medicaid conversion days, so that gives you a better idea of what the payer mix is. So again, on a year-to-date basis, the average is Medicaid census or payer mix of 56%, and private pay is 36.8%. Again, just to contrast, if you look at the chart on page 11, with the conversion days, we're showing a payer mix year-to-date of about 72% and private pay 20.7%. All right. Moving on to page 14 in terms of cash position. I'm sorry, I'm jumping in. I missed page 13. Go to the previous page. The net income for the month of August was a negative $14,000, just under $14,000. Considering the census, which was 190.7, and typically our break-even point was a census of about 195, that's actually it's a good net income for the month. Cash flow after taking out depreciation is a positive $45,000. On a year-to-date basis, our net income is $167,000, and our cash from operations is a positive $640,000. Revenues, no surprise, were down at just over $1.07 million, which was down from $1.2 million in July. And the revenue is down for two reasons. One, obviously, is the census. But the second is that we made an adjustment to the Medicaid revenue. This is an adjustment that we're moving forward. So in the month of July, which is the start of the new state fiscal year, as I've talked about before, the governor has been talking about imposing a Medicaid rate cut. And again, Governor Rauner, way back in his original budget speech, which was back in February or so, he had put out there a 12% Medicaid rate cut. The Democrats had come back and said we would agree to about a 2.9% rate cut. Now, no rate cut obviously has been imposed because we don't have a state budget. But I think moving forward, it is prudent for us to start booking our Medicaid revenue with some level of a Medicaid rate cut. And so what we did in the August financial statements is we adjusted our Medicaid revenue by a reduction of 5%. So that is roughly about $50,000 a month. And because we did not make that adjustment in the July financial statements, we made an adjustment to total about $100,000 to account for July and August. So moving forward, every month we are going to be booking our Medicaid revenue with a 5% rate cut for our current Medicaid rate that was calculated on April 1st. Any questions on that item? So again, when a budget is finally passed at whatever point in time in the future, if the rate cut happens to be less than 5%, we would make an adjustment. If it would happen to be more than 5%, we're going to have to make adjustment in that direction. But hopefully, again, the 5%, there's no magic to that number. It's just an educated guess at best of what we believe that we might see. But it could be higher and it could be lower. We really don't know what it's going to be.
So you're anticipating a $600,000 using the 5% annual loss or reduction. Okay.
Cash position, moving to page 14. The August ending cash balance was down to $300,000, and you can see that our accounts receivable increased from $4.8 million in July to $5.2 million in August, an increase of about $410,000. So to explain what happened between those 2 months is pretty simple. The state was about a week late in making its August Medicaid payments. So knock on wood, the state has been paying us on a monthly basis. We have not seen a slowdown, but the August payment was made basically in the first week of September. and our Medicare payments, which we anticipated that we were going to see at the end of August, was late by about a week at the same time. So there was roughly about $300,000 in total that we received a little late. So again, if it was on time, the ending cash balance in August would basically be just a little bit better than what we're showing here, or what we had showed in July. And again, it's just a timing issue. And there's no rhyme or reason to what occurred at the end of August and early September. Accounts payable fell from $1.7 million in June to about $1.67 million in July. And again, it's just normal fluctuations that we have going into our payables. And I put a little blurb at the bottom of page 14 in terms of where are we going to be with the cash payments for or Medicaid payments for the year. And again, there's really no crystal ball, but from the latest that we're hearing from Springfield is that the state cannot continue making payments without some form of a budget in place, meaning that there's got to be some budget cuts. And all indications are, and again, this is a very rough statement, but that the state will run out of cash sometime in early 2016 without a budget cut. When exactly, no one is telling me, but they're saying that the state will run out of money without any changes. So the question is moving forward. Again, you know, we have talked about revenue anticipation notes that we basically have sitting on the shelf that we would have to propose to the county. But again, we have to have some heads up from the state if there's going to be any form of payment slowdowns. And right now, one of the stipulations in being able to issue a revenue anticipation note, which again, we're borrowing against our Medicaid receivables, is that we would have to have some form of invoice from the state that says, so for example, if we don't receive an October payment, we still have to get some kind of documentation from the state that says, if we were paid, this is how much we're owed. Because then we have to use that for the revenue anticipation note. So again, I've been in conversations with the state about whether we'll be able to receive.
So you're hoping for an IOU, basically, yes, from the state.
Right. So if there's a three-month payment delay, then we would borrow against three-month receivables.
And this is a very, you know, very precarious circumstance that there really is no, as I understand it, there's no reserve here in this building. So if the state doesn't essentially send money on time, then at least we need the IOU so we can try to essentially seek money from some other source. Without that, things could be pretty rough.
So the other two options that we have, number one, which is what we did back in 2010 and 2011, is to start delaying payments to our vendors to reserve cash. The second option that we looked at back then also is from the lobbying standpoint, which is to try to see if we can get the county homes to be treated, for lack of a better term, similar to the safety net hospitals like Cook County. So again, those were discussions that we were actively having with the governor's office, comptroller's office, and HFS at the time. And again, those are conversations that, again, I think I've talked about that before, that we would resurrect, and I think now is the time that we're going to start resurrecting those. And again, just as a reminder, we have a lobbyist, Mr. Strickland, that we have used in the past, and that MPA has been starting to have conversations with them that we need to start strategizing what can we do, testing the waters with the new administration on whether that is going to be a viable option to protect our Medicaid payments from any payment delays, because we are, again, limited in our options as a county in getting access to cash.
Yeah, I'm just going to comment on another thing. You can sort of delay payment to some of your vendors. However, at some point, your vendors decide that they're just not going to provide things, and that leads to a quality problem, because because if you don't have food, you can't feed people. If you don't have your vendors coming to do some essential services. So I think delaying payment to vendors is a very dangerous path. That's probably...
And I'm not, obviously, you can see
how far you can stretch the taffy, but at some point when it breaks, you can't, you have a problem. Okay.
Scott, if I could just ask, you say that in early 2016, the state will not be able to, will run out of cash, but aren't the payments from the state federal money that comes to the state and then is passed to us? So why will they run out of cash? Are you anticipating not having a federal budget as well, or?
Well, because the Medicaid payments are basically 50% comes from the state and 50% comes from the feds. I think my understanding is that the state is going to run out of its
50%.
And again, the feds don't kick in their 50% until we are paid.
Okay.
We actually get paid, and they can go to the feds and say, we paid Champaign County $300,000 this month.
Okay, thanks.
And then the feds will kick in half of that, $150,000. So, and again, you know, we have these federal court judgments that says that the state has to pay us. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, they're being told they have to pay it, but if the state runs out of cash, you know, what happens? And then we, you know, again, I'm sure all of you are hearing the same thing that I'm hearing, which is we are in uncharted territory in terms of what we're dealing with the state. So, again, my job is to figure out the options that we have to maintain our cash. And again, I think the strongest alternative that we have addressed or looked at in the past is trying to get the county homes treated like the safety net hospitals. Because, again, safety net hospitals like Cook County actually have it, I believe, in statutes that they are exempt from any rate cuts and payment delays. I'd like to see if, whether we could get legislation, I'm not sure, but I think we would address that if that's a possible option to see if we could be, meeting county homes, could be treated like safety net hospitals. Because basically that's what every county home in the state of Illinois is. They're a safety net for the Medicaid populations.
Deb? I don't know what the contingency plans would be for the nursing home. I'd like to be optimistic and think the state will finally get a budget. But if we were to end up in a position where they you know, it just got to the point where the payments stopped. We knew they were going to. We find out they're going to. How much lead time do we need to come up with a plan, and what would that plan be to fill that gap? Are the resources available in the county coffers, or do we need to look at financing?
That's the point of the revenue anticipation notes.
Right.
Which I think would be the first alternative.
Would that be sufficient, I guess, is the question.
Well, if it weren't, then I imagine the backup is what is the plan for managing the lack of cash, and the county's coffers would not take the nursing home very far. I mean, it's not a permanent solution, for sure.
No, of course.
I'm not even sure it's more than a 45-day solution.
I should hope that this would never come to pass, but I guess my thinking is, and maybe nothing needs to be done today other than maybe, some, not today, but in the immediate future, where some thought needs to be given, what if? And if the EF came about, what would it be, and what would be the timeline for us to acquire that cash, the process we'd have to go through, so that we'd be in a position to know that by X date, we have to get something in motion, even if it doesn't go all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, something happens and that budget passes, but at least we're moving forward to prevent that gap from occurring. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that action would be. But I guess I propose to the fellow board members that we ask the county to at least explore that to see statutorily what we could do and what that timeline would be. J- just so it's out there, so we're not scrambling last minute, we calling special meetings. I don't know, maybe it's not necessary, maybe I'm just...
No, I think it's very realistic. I think, really, it looks a little grim right now, right?
True, and, I think we should...
And trying to have a plan, a business continuity plan, would be worth contemplating.
Well, the work on the ribbon anticipation list has been ongoing, so we've been talking with bond counsel and putting together the draft documents.
I just don't know how far all this, the bonds will carry us.
Well, the maximum for the bonds is 1 year. By statute of revenue anticipation notes, you can only borrow up to 12 months before you have to pay it back. Yes. So, and again...
What was the value of those?
Well, the value would be, you know, get borrowing against the receivables. So, again, you know...
It's a bridge.
Basically, it's a working capital loan, what the revenue anticipation notes are. You know, on average, our Medicaid runs, you know, I'd say, you know, $350,000 to $400,000 a month. So, you know, the way I've looked at it is, you know... Would the state, you know, would we ever hit the 1 year? If Medicaid didn't pay any of its providers for a year, every nursing home
sure.
is going to go out of business.
Absolutely.
So,
so
I don't think we ever hit that.
The tax anticipation bonds will float us.
So well, these are different from the tax anticipation notes because the tax anticipation notes is borrowing against the property taxes.
Right.
So we get the cash in December. So this is borrowing against... Medicaid receivables. So if you have a 1, 2, 3 month payment delay, then you will issue a revenue anticipation note equal to 1, 2, or 3 months to bridge us in terms of getting cash flow. So that's the theory behind it.
Well, I just voiced my thought that I'm concerned. I don't want us to be in a position where a gap that we're not able to.
I think you're right. I think it would be beneficial to actually map out a plan of how the revenue anticipation notes work, how far they carry us. If those don't work, then what's the alternative from the county's perspective before you're looking at, you know, more drastic measures? And so it makes sense to put together a plan like that.
We can put that together.
Josh.
We have to continue with our meeting. Actually, I don't think we can accept additional input from the public at this point, so let's go get back to our agenda.
What are you doing to, I guess, tighten your belt to lower this as much as we can? We're paying a lot out in overtime. We're paying a lot out in rent and nurses because of the scheduling problems and staffing problems. And some of this stuff needs to be looked at pretty hard because we also need to tighten our belts in the anticipation. City government's got the same problem. They're cutting their back revenue back out of our village in Oklahoma. We knocked $165,000 set it aside because we don't figure we're not going to get it because you want to get that tax revenue back too.
Right.
Not just this. And so we need to take a hard look at where we're spending money and how we're spending it right now until we get to the state.
I agree with that. I think number one is what has been brought up previously, which is we got to get our agency costs down. We got to get our turnover down, get more of our own CNAs in there, and get our agency costs down. I think that'll be the biggest positive impact to the bottom line.
We can't keep plowing down the road like we are. I mean, you're going to have to tighten it down tight in order to get through this. Otherwise, you're just going to be borrowing money that's paying interest on top of that. You know?
Yep, I agree.
Have you considered how you're going to get the cost of our agency workers down and get permanent staff?
Yeah, and that's when we go through the strategic metrics. I mean, those are things that we're addressing there. I'll defer then to give you an update on where we are with those items.
Yeah.
So that would be a perfect segue.
Okay. Let's go on to our next item, which is Chair's report. I don't believe we actually have it.
No, we're not the Chair's report. I'm on to
You want to do CNA and diet, okay, strategic objective metrics.
All right, so if you go to page 43 and 44, so again, as we
if I could ask a question before we get that far through this large report, Scott, if you could just indulge me and touch on the assets, the balance sheet. It's titled page one, but that's not the whole package. Well, I can't read the number.
Page 23?
Yeah.
Or page, no, 33.
33. Yeah, it's hard to read. Okay. My question is, can you explain, and I'm sure I've heard this before, but I looked at this earlier today, net of uncollectible amounts, and then net of uncollectible amounts underneath that. The first one totals $2.4 million.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain what that is? Because we're counting that as an asset, but then I read uncollectible amounts.
Right, so what that means is, so you got accounts receivable for private pay. That's what we're showing on the balance sheet that we're owed for private pay. So private pay would include residents that are paying out of pocket, so would it be Medicaid or Medicare. It would also include the resident liability, which is the Social Security checks, meaning that when someone is Medicaid, now let's say the room and board is $5,000 a month, and your Social Security check is $1,000, the state pays us $4,000, and we have to collect $1,000 in the Social Security check. So that
so it's the state's portion of it.
It's the residence portion that's owed to us for Medicaid. So that is included in the private pay.
So when I look at 1.5, almost 1.6 million,
mm-hmm.
whose money is that that's owed to us or to the home? Is that I'm reading that?
Yes.
And who is that?
Again, it's
it's the resident.
It's the resident.
It's individual residents. The aggregate of, say, 100 residents that haven't paid their bill.
Well, I'm confused, though. Not surprisingly, maybe. Because our number of private pay residents is, a small number, right?
Well, it runs about, it's 36%. Now, the other number that's also in private pay is the Medicaid pendings. So the people that we know are going to apply for Medicaid.
Medicaid will catch up with it.
So
hopefully.
Right. Some of it, yeah.
So all this is due. Okay. Now my memory's been refreshed.
Okay.
So just in that particular number, roughly $1 million of that private pay is Medicaid, current Medicaid applications that are being booked as private pay.
So 500,000 people, or $500,000, or almost 600 are people that, for whatever reason, haven't paid their bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you haven't written it off yet. You're hopeful in some way that you may claw that money.
Well, then now if you take a look, and I think there's some confusion because it says receivables, net of uncollectible amounts. If you take a look at the next section, where you've got hospice, private pay, allowance for private pay, allowance for private patient care, and accounts, allowances. You see allowances of $112,000, $135,000, and then even there's another amount a little bit further down, allowances for uncollectible accounts for Medicare of $24,000, which is under the heading of intergovernment receivables net of uncollectible. See that.
Yeah, I see it.
So those are, it's roughly about $290,000 in write-offs that we currently have on the balance sheet. So the way to look at that is we anticipated this year, about $290,000 in write-offs. And so if it's higher or lower, we'll make an adjustment. But then this gets to you, the question that you have about budgeting for bad debts. And we've never put a budget number for bad debt, but at the end of the year, we always make an adjustment, and there's always been bad debt, this net of uncollectible receivables on the balance sheet. So there's always been a number that we've adjusted. So, but moving forward, it makes sense for us to make sure that we put a number in there for bad debt. And the changes that we made to the budget will reflect that.
Thank you, Scott.
I have a question. Scott, you said that I guess the private pay that's on Medicare or Medicaid, do you all get their checks or do the check come directly to their bank account?
It depends. The Social Security rules state that we cannot require anyone to make us, we call it repayee, where it automatically comes to us. We can request that the facility is made repayee, but we cannot make it a condition of admission or force the residents or the families to do that. We have a fair percentage of Social Security checks where we are the repayee, but by no stretch of the imagination is it near 100%. And in those cases, we have to have the resident or the family member write us a check for that amount every month.
Because I've talked to people that in nursing homes assisted living, where their checks go directly to the nursing home, and someone was told that, you know, like the first 3 months they got their checks, but after 3 months then in a facility, then it would automatically go to that facility.
No, this is the conundrum that we have, because the state, Medicaid says that Social Security check is part of the room and board that we're to be paid. Social Security tells us that no, it is not ours, it's the residents. Social Security that says we cannot force anyone to make the nursing home a repayee. And so I can't tell you what other facilities do, but the law specifically, the Social Security regulation specifically states that we cannot require anyone or force anyone to make the facility a repayee. But that Social Security amount, less the resident income, which is, I always forget, $30 a month, the rest of that Social Security check is a part of our Medicaid room and board. And from the state standpoint, that's ours. We don't collect it, the state doesn't care. It's our obligation to make sure that we collect that money.
So how long has the person went without paying their portion of their
We've had issues with that. And that's one of the things that we've tightened up on to try to get, you know, basically from day one, we expect to see that Social Security check.
So how long can it go on? A month, 2 months, 6 months?
The collection policies that we have in place now is basically, you know, within 90 days, we could start involuntary discharge proceedings if we don't have payment or some kind of payment plan in place.
How much of this
accounts
receivable does that amount to?
On Social Security, I don't know.
I have a question.
I'm sorry, we're not allowed to take input from the public at this time.
Well, I'm going to find out, is that constitutional, too?
All right, well, I guess we're going to have to sort of try to carry on. I guess you're back, you're ready to get to your strategic objective things?
But no, I'll see if I can find out what that number is.
Yeah, we need to know that, but
It's a big one thing
you need to go small courts with. Ladies have the same problem, and we wouldn't let him go 60 days if we had all the claims in court, you know. But what happens, the kids cash the check, and there
right, it's gone.
And that's exactly what she's alluding to.
That's what you're headed to.
And that's probably a pretty good size amount of that if you've got much of that problem.
I don't think it's a big portion, but it's part of that. It's definitely a part of it.
We ought to be able to collect some of that money. That's a lot of money sitting out there that's not been paid. We need it, but a lot of effort right now.
Oh, we've been putting a lot of effort in. But again, just keep in mind that $1 million of that is is the Medicaid application. So, but even the $600,000, we've been spending a lot of resources to attack that issue. Okay, page 43. I know the print is kind of small, and this is the HR dashboard. So it's updated with retention rate and turnover rate data for August. And again, the turnover rate data for all positions is 64%, and that's up from July, which was 59.7. And again, I can tell you the big factor or the driver of that is the CNAs. So the 12-month turnover rate for CNAs is not moving in the direction that we'd like to see. It's up to 81%. Up from 72.7% in July. Now, if you shoot over to page 44, I can tell you why it went up, and that's because in August we had 9 CNA separations. And again, in the previous month, we had, in July, we had 3, in June, we had 5, and May, we had 5. So I think August was the highest that we had since last August, you know, when we had 9. And so, and yet, you know, I didn't ask you the question, but I wonder if this is... I didn't go back any further. This is a cyclical thing that happens during the summer months. But anyway, I gave you a breakdown for the 9 separations that we had in August. So we had 3 no-call, no-shows. And please pardon my grammar there. It was unable to contact these 3 individuals. So there could have been an issue at the facility that caused this, but we just don't know with those 3 no-call, no-shows. The next bullet, we had 1 CNA that left for school obligations. She basically wanted to concentrate on, I think she's working on her, is it FPN or RN? And the next was 2 CNAs we lost to Carl Clinic because Carl has been offering a $500 sign-on bonus plus tuition reimbursements. And the asterisk that I put on there is Karen had told me that one of the CNAs has already left Carl because they did not accommodate her school schedule. She may be coming back to the nursing home. So again, that's something that I think in, you know, the negotiations that we're having with the union, you know, we've always looked at sign-on bonuses. I'm always on the fence with those because, you know, they'll take the money and then they'll leave after getting it. And when we've done sign-on bonuses at any of our county homes, we've always back-ended it, meaning that we'll spread it over a year, 12-month period, but more of the bonus will be paid out in the last quarter or in the last month. So hopefully they'll stick around. But again, you know, it's something that we'll take a look at. Tuition reimbursement is something that we've been talking about. Again, also with the union in terms of trying to put together career ladders. You know, do we offer a CNA tuition reimbursement if they want to be an LPN or a 2-year RN that will cover the tuition, and then there would be a commitment that they would have to stay on the facility for, you know, 2 years or 3 years or something like that. So again, it's something that we're thinking about doing. But my understanding is that there are a lot of scholarships available in this area for freshman parents, for single parents, low-income individuals. So there's already stuff out there, and it's a matter of whether, you know, if that's something that we should be offering ourselves in addition. 2 terminations for care issues, meaning that there were personnel issues, care issues that resulted in terminations, and then we had 1 CNA who had a car issue where she couldn't get herself to work. And I don't think I'm going to advocate at this point that we start offering the cars to her. At some point.
Is collective bargaining open to the idea of a sign-on bonus, do you think? Has that ever entered into part of the discussion?
That's something we've thrown around, yeah.
Okay.
And then in terms of the issue, you know, one of the other issues that we have instituted to try to improve on our turnover rate is what we've talked about with the preceptor training program that Karen has put together over the last couple of months. So the bullets there provide you an update of where we're at. So we, again, we've had RN, CNA, I'm sorry, a nurse, CNA, dietary, laundry, housekeeping representatives in this preceptor training program, and we've had two recently hired nurses complete a full orientation with our nurse preceptor, and the evaluations of that were positive, complimentary of the whole orientation training process that we have in place, that we have revamped, and hopefully that'll translate to those two nurses staying with us and not leaving us. We identified, you know, orientation as one of the areas that we wanted to address to try to reduce turnover, because again, the turnover stats show that the rate is concentrated in people leaving when they've been employed less than 6 months. So we, you know, again, the feedback that we've had has indicated that orientation may be part of that issue. So hopefully the new preceptor training program, and as we expand that to other preceptors, will have a positive impact on our turnover.
Do you all have staff meetings?
Yes. Units have them on a weekly basis.
Do they have one that is met?
Yeah. We do those monthly.
Okay. Skip over to page 52, and this is on the Pinnacle score. We're under quality of care, which is number 3. And this is page 52. And so what I've added here, we've had a previous discussion that, you know, one of the problems that we have with the Pinnacle score is that each month it's a sample of 15 residents or families being interviewed. So what I've included here on page 52 is the last four quarters. So basically in each quarter you're going to see roughly about 45 or so surveys. And so that kind of takes out the monthly variability. And I'll start including this in the monthly management reports. So again, so I've given you the last four quarters. So for example, with overall satisfaction, those scores have increased from 3.91 in the quarter September through September, October, November 2014 to the last quarter, which is June, July, and August of this year. The score is 4.10. And I also included the national average for each of those scores so you can see where we are in comparison to the national average. And I've quantified or separated into two tables. One, any of the scores that have shown a positive trend, and then again, a four-quarter trending downtrend. So you can clearly see the measures that are going up or down. And you can see, when taking a look at the four-quarter trends, we've had half of the measures going up and half of the measures going down. And again, you can see, just to point out, dining and quality of food is showing a positive trend. Although the numbers are still well below the national average. Except in terms of quality of food, the last quarter is actually just below the national average.
Got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Go back to page 50.
Okay.
The quality measures, Champaign County Nursing Home, staffing rating 3 out of 5 average.
Right.
How do we fall into that category that high with that amount of turnover?
They all have turnover. Staffing is just an annual snapshot. They only do a snapshot during our annual survey, and that stays with us for the whole year.
But the staffing numbers is based on, you know, the actual staff that we have in the building. So we know we have a high turnover, and that's causing us to use agency, but the staffing numbers include all RNs, LPNs, and CNAs, whether they're our own or agency staff, they're all included in those numbers.
Okay.
please stop me if I skip over something that you have a question about, but I'm going to go over to page 61. We are still under quality of care issue number 3, and I just wanted to point out our outpatient therapy program, which is the last row table under medical management measure. So again, our outpatient therapy, which is located right across from our adult daycare, is officially open. So we started, or therapy started seeing the first 2 residents, I think we're actually up to 3, maybe more, about 3, 2 weeks ago. And those 3 are adult daycare residents. But I think, did we have anyone that we were assessing that were being discharged? Because I know that was one of the other issues that we're also going to look at. So again, the adult daycare program was put together, the outpatient therapy program was specifically done because we had our MCOs, managed care organizations like Health Alliance, plus our the VA had said that they would love to see an outpatient therapy program to augment our adult daycare program. So we already have 3 residents that have been referred to the therapy program. One of the other areas that we're also looking to see in outpatient therapy is any discharge residents. So again, this fits very well with what the hospitals especially Health Alliance and Molina are looking at, which is a reduction in Medicare length of stay. We want to see our Medicares sent home as quickly as possible. And from a practical standpoint, we believe with a lot of these residents, if we fight with these HMOs almost on a daily basis, they'll say 14 days and they're going home. We'll say they're not going to be ready to go home in 14 days. You need to give us a few more days or another week. And I will tell you from a practical standpoint, 9 times out of 10, they say no, they're going to go home. 14 days. Now we have the ability that if they go home, we can still provide some continuity of care that they can come back and see the outpatient therapy. They're actually going to see the same therapist that they saw on an inpatient basis. So the strategy is that we're talking to the MCOs that we have this, which will help reduce the Medicare length of stay, improve the continuity of care with therapy, and hopefully they will continue to refer us more Medicare because we're providing a necessary service that fits with their model of controlling their Medicare length of stay and expenditures. So if we play, I always like to say, we play ball with them and work with them, hopefully over time they're going to continue or they will increase the amount of Medicare referrals to us. And that'll help us fill our beds up, even though our length of stays are being shrunk on an accurate basis.
Question. Is there a difference at this point in the number of days you're keeping someone in therapy inpatient between the Medicare Advantage and the regular Medicare then?
Yeah, we don't actively track that, but I can almost guarantee that the length of stay is
Medicare Advantage is very case managed, yeah.
Yeah.
We get predictions for 7 days.
I'm just curious what the typical difference would be.
Oh, I'd say on average, and again, this is just a big guesstimate, but our traditional Medicare average is probably about 30 days, 35 days, and we're looking at 14 days or maybe even less than 14 days with the Medicare Advantage.
Correct.
And again, when I've spoken at conferences and I've asked other administrators in the audience, you know, what's your Medicare authorization? When I have homes in Chicago tell me 14 days, we see 14 days, it's not individualized. You know, they're it's just the nature of the business. And so again, we can fight it, and the best way to fight it is to do what we've done like with outpatient therapy. You know, we still get some revenue on the outpatient side, but they can see that we're doing the right things and hopefully it turns into more Medicare referrals over the long term. So in the short term, without question, it's really squeezing our length of stay, which means our Medicare revenue is squeezing at the same time.
When you retire, don't sign up for Medicare Advantage.
Do the hospital provide the patients for the therapy, or do the patients decide where they want to go for their therapy?
Ultimately, it's the resident and the family's decision.
Very often, though, they do turn to whoever is their care provider in that hospital and say, well, what do you think? And that's where that, you know, that care provider may have experience with one nursing home or another that seems to fit better. But it's hard to say. It's still the resident, their family.
But especially with Health Alliance and Molina, if you're in their managed care programs, they're going to be much more active in directing you to a specific nursing home or provider, without question, as opposed to if you were traditional Medicare. All right, next item I want to point out is on page 64, and it's our quality measures for CMS. The actual measures have not changed, I think, since last month, but at the bottom of the page, added in there is the actual point scores that we get for the quality measures. So again, the score is calculated on, is it 13 of the measures? There's a subset of the measures that you see in the table that are used to calculate it. And each of those measures, and I believe there's 11 of them. Okay, thank you. And they range in score from 0 to 100. Our score right now is 755 points. The cut point between a 4-star and a 5-star rating is 760. So again, I believe maybe a quarter ago, 3 or 4 months ago, we were at a 5-star rate for quality measures. Our quality point score has not changed. The cut point has actually changed, and we are 5 points away from getting our quality measure back up to a 5-star. So hopefully in the next quarter, we will see us get to a 5-star rate. So again, I think that gives you a better idea of where we are in terms of the quality measure rating. Food service, I'm off to page 65. I want to point out page 66. The summary of the current activities that are ongoing by Healthcare Services Group to address all of our food and dining service issues. And the best way to characterize this is they're getting back to the basics. And so the supervisors have completed a competency checklist for every cook and food service worker that's currently in the building, meaning that each employee had to either demonstrate or describe every task that they're responsible for to make sure that there's an understanding of what their job requires. The same thing is also going to be done, or is in the process of being done, with the supervisors to make sure that they understand what their responsibilities are. I think that's the third bullet, where the dietary manager and our regional manager are updating the job flow sheets that will provide, that's with the staff. The next bullet below that. The dietary manager and regional manager will provide the assistant supervisors with a daily job flow sheet to provide the supervisors with a list of daily responsibilities and to hold them, to also hold the supervisors accountable to what they should be doing on a daily basis. And again, it's been our position that that's what had been lacking, is making sure that the supervisors are holding the employees accountable, but also that the employees themselves have never gotten the proper training and orientation in their responsibilities. So this is literally, I believe, getting back to the basics of making sure that each individual in the dietary department knows what they're responsible for. Cleaning schedules, responsibilities, and again, the third bullet from the bottom, the most recent orientees that have been hired have been providing much more positive feedback about their orientation experience than we have seen in the past. And that is basically under our new dietary manager that's taking place less than a month. Any questions on those issues? So the last under strategic objective measures I have just under contract management, which is on page 69, and that is I've been talking about that we've been looking to put together a cardio or pulmonary rehab program. And the problem that we've had is finding a pulmonologist who will be willing to come out to the facility on a routine basis to assess any of our residents who either have pneumonia or some kind of chronic lung disease. And we have identified a pulmonologist with Christie Clinic, Dr. Sheik, who Karen and I met with a few weeks ago, and he's very interested. And we had just received a draft contract from Christie Clinic that we're reviewing. And so hopefully over the next few weeks we'll get that contract solidified and we'll get the document here on a regular basis. And again, the whole strategy here is one of the highest reasons for readmissions to the hospital is, and even with our facility, but in general with all hospitals, is congestive heart failure, COPD, and other chronic lung diseases where they have to go to the hospital to get tuned up. And again, the strategy is, why can't they get tuned up here at the facility with proper medical and nursing management?
Comments, a couple of early comments early on from the public had to do with a perception about the food not sort of on a downturn in the past month. Any thoughts on what might be going on there? Because it seems to be at variance with some of the metrics.
Well, I think the issue is, I think we're starting to see improvement, but again, you know, what we've always said is it's there's always variation from day to day. So by no stretch of the imagination are we close to being where we want to be or being perfect. So there's still consistency.
You know, this temperature thing, we've done a lot of talking about temperature. What's the deal with that?
$50-some thousand.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm just wondering. What's that?
We spent $50-some thousand on plates, you know, carts that don't seem to affect anything.
One of... perfect example is, so you've got this plate warmer.
Yeah.
And so you have to put one warming tray on the plate warmer. You'll see some of the food service workers
do it. Yeah, there's no way
multiple.
Heat's going to go through multiple.
Right. I mean, so it's little things like that keep occurring on, maybe not on a daily basis, but depending on who the employee is. And it's, again, it's just holding those individuals accountable for something as simple as that. The other issue is making sure that, you know, that they're getting the trays out on a regular basis. But it starts off with making sure that the plates are heated up and that the plate warmer is heated up at the same time. So, I mean, it's those little things that... Again, that's just one example of the issues that lead to cold plates, but the other issue is making sure that the trays are delivered to the carts in a timely fashion. And the issue that I think we have with Mr. Laker is we call those the staybacks, you know, and making sure, and again with Mr. Goodwine's mother, is, you know, the staybacks change on a daily basis, you know. One day, Mr. Goodwine's nurse may not be feeling well, but making sure that information is communicated to the staff, CNAs, but also into the kitchen, is something that needs to improve, you know, consistency, because it does change on a daily basis. So, I mean, those are the issues that we're trying to deal with, and it's a concerted effort between nursing and dietary to make sure that communication is there. I mean, that's something that we've been talking about that has to be addressed, because we do know that it is a big problem. It continues to be a big problem. And again, you know, making sure those stay backs, because again, part of the problem had been you get a cart, it includes residents that are in the dining room, but also the stay backs. So then they hand out, the cart gets to the dining room. All the residents in the dining room get their trays, but the stay backs are still in the cart and haven't been delivered. So we're talking about, why can't we just have a separate cart for the stay backs? But again, making sure that happens on a routine basis is not where it needs to be.
Just like a lot of them pull that lid off, set it on top of the cart, carry the food to the table, clear across the dining room, air blowing up, cooling it off along the way. Then taking the lid off and then putting it back on the cart. They take it off, they take the food to them. Watch it time and time again, you know.
Right. But again, it starts with what I talked about in the food service section. It starts with the basics, making sure
it was hot to start.
Right. So,
got that staffing for the dining room up to capacity, or
we're getting close. We're getting better. Yes.
So how many per meal that would
for 2 years? So it's basically on a day shift, we want 7 cooks and food service workers, and evening shift, we have 2 shifts, 7 on each shift total is our, and that, again, equates to just under 20 FTEs, and I think right now in the report, I think we're at 16, so we've been seeing improvement in the staffing and food service. We've actually seen the turnover in food service down over the last 2 or 3 months.
Are the residents assigned to a certain spot that they eat at? You know, like you might have several wings.
They are assigned my table, and then those get updated frequently because people move around.
So I would think that if they are assigned to a table, if somebody is not there and have to be sick, that automatically the food server would take the food to the room or at least see why that person is not there.
That's how it's supposed to work, yes.
All right, well, I think we're ready to go to item number 8, chair's report. There actually, as I understand, is no chair's report tonight, right? So, okay. And then we're ready to go to item 9, other business.
I move that we enter into executive session pursuant to 5 ILCS 120/2C11 to consider litigation that is probable or imminent against Champaign County. I further move that the following individuals remain present: Scott Gima, Karen Nofke, Deb Busey, Kathy Vanderslice, and the recording secretary.
You're moving that, so I'll second it.
All in favor?
I need a roll call.
Okay. Well, we need a roll call.
Lynn?
Yes.
Hodson?
Yes.
Palinkas?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Cowart?
Yes.
Banks? And Emanuel.
Okay. We are going to go into a closed session. I'm going to ask members.